When I designed my advanced writing course focused on digital rhetoric and audio composition, I knew I wanted students to strengthen their practice in both listening to and composing with sound. I decided to draw upon Heidi McKee's framework for analyzing and teaching audio and multimodal compositions to help structure my course. McKee breaks sound down into four elements: music, voice, sound effects, and silence. I structured the bulk of my course around these four elements, anchoring them in three sound writing assignments: a remix, focusing on music, a narrative, focusing on voice, and a concept in 60 seconds, focusing on sound effects and soundscapes. These three assignments formed my Elements of Sound assignment sequence. Students then chose one or more of these pieces to revise and expand for a final project of their choosing. In this reflective piece, I address each assignment from the sequence in turn, first describing my approach to teaching the element, and then giving examples from student work to explain how students took up that assignment. Along the way, I'll address how these assignments challenged me as a teacher and what I think students ultimately learned from the experience. Unit 1. Music. By the end of this unit, I wanted students to be able to listen to a piece of music, describe what they heard with some specificity and depth, and to be able to manipulate music to suit their compositional needs. Further, I wanted students to interrogate music as a cultural artifact. To that end, we read pieces like Levitin's Introduction to This Is Your Brain on Music that introduced students to terms that would help them describe what they heard. To deepen understanding of music as a rhetorical practice, we discussed musical genres and remix, grounding those discussions by watching videos like Ferguson's Everything is a Remix and Vox's recent short documentary on the history of protest music. We listened to podcasts about music, like Switched On Pop's episode comparing Toby Keith's Made in America with Jay-Z's song of the same name. To help students put what they were learning into practice, not only as critical listeners, but also as producers, I tasked them with making a remix. Students were to manipulate music by remixing it with another piece of sound, whether another piece of music, a narrative voice, or some other element. My overall goals for the assignment were for students to manipulate music to make something new, to demonstrate engagement with concepts from our reading, to demonstrate reflective and purposeful use of sound, and to simply gain facility with the technology to learn to use the programs for sound writing. Students responded to the remix prompt in a variety of ways. Some chose to remediate creative writing pieces, some chose to reflect on their own music literacy, and still others did more conceptual pieces, exploring, through sound, a concept that interested them. The variety of pieces I received speaks to both a strength and a weakness of this assignment. The sequence is fairly flexible. It allows students to pursue their own interests and make their own decisions about the genre their piece might most fit. This flexibility allowed students the creative freedom to meet their own goals for the projects, but it also led to problems for me as I responded to and assessed their work. It was difficult to compare students' pieces. I wanted to reward students for taking creative risks. I didn't want to mark them down for trying something new that ultimately failed, as long as they were learning something from the process. Take Blue's remix as an example. Blue's piece, titled Prelude to a Dream, included a variety of music and other elements that were purposefully interwoven to evoke a feeling of unease and detachment. That purpose isn't explicit in the piece itself exactly, but it is developed in their artist statement. Blue's piece, experimental as it was one of the more difficult for me to assess. Were I to listen to this with a rubric in hand that, for instance, designated clarity as an important factor, I'm not sure how well Blue would have done. And yet, clarity was not one of my goals for this piece. Blue demonstrated a sense of purpose in their artist statement, and drew on specifics from the piece to show how they had tried to achieve that purpose. Although my feedback to Blue asked for a bit more development of the artist statement, it seemed to me that they had begun to play with sound. They'd manipulated music from various sources, some originally recorded, some found online, and they've done so with a sense of rhetorical purpose. And for this assignment, that's exactly what I wanted to see. To try to account for the various goals and projects, I ended up working with students to develop a rubric. During an in-class workshop, we collaboratively designed and tested an assessment rubric. Once students turned in their piece, I gave them feedback in two stages. I first listened to the piece and wrote a response detailing my listening experience. I then read the artist statement, listened again, and used the rubric to write another brief response justifying the grade. Especially for this first assignment in the sequence, I think that this kind of transparency and collaboration in the assessment was crucial to creating an atmosphere in which students felt they could push boundaries and play with sound. Unit 2, Voice and Narration. As we transitioned into the next unit on voice, we listened to podcasts and other pieces that featured voices prominently. In addition to reading pieces theorizing voice, we also took the opportunity to focus on storytelling. In the anchoring assignment for this unit, students composed an audio narrative. Many students began to build from the skills they started to develop with the first assignment, choosing to use music or other sounds that would help them illustrate a scene, convey a particular mood, or emphasize particular elements of a piece. While some students started by simply adding music to a narrative, I encouraged them, through in-class workshops and mini conferences, to use music or other sounds to enhance, extend, or change meaning, in particular focusing on using music for emphasis. D'Arcy's poem, which he remediated for my class, gives us several examples of how students use music and other elements to foreground and emphasize particular parts of a vocal track. In this piece, titled The Execution, D'Arcy used sound effects for illustration, as he writes, to create a mini-movie. For example, he illustrates the speaker's description with the whispers of voices and the crunch of gravel. Further, though he uses musical elements to evoke a sense of anxiety and impending doom, he also uses music to create emphasis. That metallic drone sound that repeats throughout is silenced just as we reach the climax of the plot. Listen.
Everyone is silent. She says one word, and the village stops.
Ultimately, it's the voice of the poem speaker that drives the piece, but the use of music and the use of silence helps emphasize important parts of the poem. As you'll see in his artist statement, D'Arcy actually completed this piece in response to the remix assignment, but I include it here as an example of how a student might respond to the narrative assignment because I think it fits this prompt just as well, if not better, than it fit the remix because it's driven by vocals. What we also see in D'Arcy's artist statement, however, is a reflection on the composing process that helped him to approach later assignments with a better sense of the amount of time involved. One of the key takeaways that many students learned from these first two assignments was how long it takes to complete a piece of sound writing. They learned that the process of planning, organizing, recording and collecting sound, drafting, mixing, and editing took much longer than they might have expected. In this second assignment, students were a little less ambitious in their plans than they were in the remix assignment. I also worked with them to think about how they could use the narrative as a small piece of a larger final project. For example, several students interviewed family members, ultimately expanding their audio narratives for longer podcast-style audio essays. For these students, this was just the start of what would become a longer piece for the final project. Unit 3, Sound Effects. As we moved into our unit on sound effects, we returned to some of our readings from earlier in the term, revisiting concepts from McKee, but also our experience of sounds in everyday life. This time from the perspective of producers of sound as much as listeners. We focus the unit on soundscapes, listening to pieces such as the Sound Matters podcast episode, The Sound of Life Itself. We listen to Stedman and Stone's sonic review of Rickert's ambient rhetoric, returning again to rhetorical principles to understand sound. To anchor this unit, I assigned students an audio concept in 60 project, adapted from a video concept in 60 assignment I'd been introduced to through the Digital Media and Composition Institute at Ohio State several years before. Students had 60 seconds in which to convey or interrogate a concept, primarily through using sounds other than music or voice. Perhaps because it followed our narrative projects, many of my students, like Avery's example demonstrates, chose to tell stories or evoke characters with their 60 seconds. Avery's 60-second piece about an alien abduction also provides us a strong example of how students could build on earlier work, expanding their repertoire and putting concepts from the course into practice. Avery's initial remix piece, the first piece they wrote for me, combined a poem told in first person with music that played up less obvious themes in the poem and with sounds like the opening of a door and chatter in a cafe. And these sounds told us that we, as listeners, were walking along with the poem's speaker. In Avery's Concept in 60 piece, they again put listeners in the position of walking with the main character, this time a hiker in the woods who's abducted by aliens. In workshopping Avery's 60-second piece in class, we focused on feedback that would make this feel realistic, such as making the sound of an owl hooting further away than the crackle of twigs underfoot. The result was a piece that made use of genre conventions, the hiker, nighttime noises, alien sounds, to tell a story with no narration. In their artist statement, Avery reflected on these choices and eventually built on this idea even more, making their final project into an audio essay on subject position and sound design. Avery's experience of figuring out how to convey subject position through multiple pieces and then using that experience to drive their final project was one ideal outcome for the way a student might experience this assignment sequence. I hoped that this sequence gave students flexibility to pursue subjects of interest, as Blue did in exploring embodiment, D'Arcy did in remediating creative work, and Avery did by exploring how to account for subject position in designing sonic experiences. As students completed these three projects, they became more adept at both listening and producing sound that made use of music, sound effects, and voice. Along the way, they learned key rhetorical concepts that would help them with a variety of multimodal projects.